Welcome to part two of Monkeys.com and Rhino.com's exclusive interview with Michael Nesmith. During our conversation, Michael recalled the final original Monkeys tour that he took part in 1969, in which they were backed by an R&B band known as Sam and the Good Timers.
Who knew what we were going to do? I mean, we couldn't, you know, in terms of sustaining ourselves as a band, it just wasn't, that wasn't in the cards. You know, the musical pressures and influences were just too different. So working in front of a band was an obvious thing, but to work in front of a band that could kind of play everything, all the way from Mickey's R&B to David's Broadway stuff, and handle a little bit of the rock and roll stuff, was, you know, that's when we thought, well, we'll try, you know, maybe we just get ourselves a good R&B band that can play all this stuff. And Sam and the Good Timers came to be Rhythm and Bubblegum. As ironic, of course, as Hendrix opening for us, but it was ironic, and we got a job playing in Mexico, and we played, I think, in Guadalajara or someplace, a giant bull ring down there. When I say giant, I don't know how really giant it was, you know, just everything is armor-corded these days, and you look back and you think, yeah, it was the size of Pennsylvania, but it was, I don't know how actually big it was, but we went there. Sam and the Good Timers were backing us up. Nobody came. The place was empty. Not one person. Oh, well, maybe there were 12. But this place set, you know, it looked like it had room for 250,000 people in there. And I don't know what the promoter was thinking.
Monkeys performance at the Plaza Monumental on Sunday, the 27th of July, 1969, was just a side trip for their primary appearances that took place in Mexico City at the Forum nightclub, promoted by Javier Castro, whose daughter was reportedly a huge Monkeys fan.
You know what? I think to this day, I believe it was her birthday. I think that's what was going on at that club. Jerry Parencio was our agent at the time, and he charged this guy some exorbitant sum just to make him go away, and he paid it. He paid it, and then Jerry made him bring it to the United States in a briefcase in cash, and he brought it. So we had to go.
Despite the lucrative nature of the performances in Mexico City, the trip did not pass without incident for Michael Nesmith.
I had my camera. I'd gotten a new Nikon, and I was there was a demonstration outside, and these busloads of Mexican soldiers came and surrounded the town square, and coming down the street was this huge riot crowd with banners and yelling slogans, you know, advancing on these guys. And I started taking pictures because I thought, you know, who knows what's going to happen. Well, actually, nothing did happen. They never made it to the town square, and, I don't think anything happened. But later that night, I got this knock on the door. And these two guys were standing up and said, we're Agent so-and-so, Agent 39 and 47. They gave me two numbers. And they pushed their way past me and pushed their way in the room. And they took my camera and took the film out of it and left with it. So I told the club owner about it, and he was incensed. He said, what? This is terrible. I'm going to check into this. Of course, this is a much different Mexico than it is now. I mean, it was, you know, this was the 60s, and things were wildly different. So we got back from the show that night, which was, you know, I guess 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm going by the desk. This guy waves at me from the desk, and he said, here's your film back, and there's my film can. And it had a little note underneath it and said, we're sorry for the inconvenience, you know, Agents 37 and 49. And there was the film back in the can. I thought, boy, this club owner's got some real pull. Yeah, I don't know who these guys were, but he really must be. So I get up to the room, I go in the room, and now here comes a knock on the door again. Bang, bang, bang. Open. It's the same two guys. And they said, did you get your film back? I said, yeah. And thank you. So, well, we're really sorry. And, you know, we don't mean to cause any trouble. And please forgive us. And I said, well, I it's fine. I wasn't upset. As a matter of fact, I sort of understood what you were doing. I didn't like it, but I wasn't surprised or shocked. And they said, well, here's a little token of our token of our apology. And they handed me I think it was like a sock, like a white sock or something, and obviously full of herb. So I kind of looked at it, and that's when David Pearl was there, and he was standing by me. And they said, so here you go. And they held it out, and I didn't want to take it. And so David took it and said, thank you. And then they walked away, and I said, is that grass, David? And he opened it up and looked at it and smelled it. And he said, yeah, it sure is. And I said, well, what are we going to do with it? He said, I don't know. He walked out. We never took it into the room. Walked out to a seat, like a love seat or something. He was sitting in the hallway of this big atrium in this hotel. It was the big, like, Mexican Plaza Hotel or something like that. And he lifted up the seat and just poured the entire contents of this sock full of grass out underneath the seat in that hotel. We just left it there. And then I think he tossed the sock over the railing or something. So, oh boy. And then I never heard any more about it. But that's the story of the great taking pictures of the riot.
We'd like to do a new one for you now called She's So Far Up, She's In.
Monkees' 1969 jaunt was, of course, a far cry from their record-setting 1967 summer tour.
Well, that was the big tour. That was like 53 or 56 dates or something, and we set house records, and that was that's what I call the big tube. We started off in and it was all limos and private plane, and then hotel, then the stadium, then the hotel, then the limo, then the private plane, and it was just, one big, long corridor that just went on and on and on interminably. But that was the summer of love.
You guys were number two for the entire summer. You had the number two album right under Sgt. Pepper.
With no airplay.
Right, you had no single off the album?
I was always under the impression that the FM guys had just banded together, kind of like the Hall of Famers, and had just said, no, they don't deserve this. We're not going to play any more Monkees music. Anyway, yeah, 67 was the big year. That was the one I remember.
The Monkees outsold the Beatles and the Rolling Stones in 1967.
And you think that's true?
I do think it's true, but...
Amazing.
But, that's based on the fact that the Monkees had four number one albums all in the course of about 18 months.
We hope that disproves some rumors.
They had three number one records at that point. Wow. Who knew where all that money and those records went? Gosh, I have no idea.
After citing some further facts and figures for Nez, conversation soon turned to the new reissues of Headquarters and Pisces Aquarius. He wondered, is that it? Could the gold mine of Monkees audio now be at its end?
You think that's probably it too, right? I mean, I don't know what how can't mine any more out of that Monkees than you already have. I don't think, Andrew. I think it's all done. Don't you?
Is that? Do you feel that way?
Listen to you. Listen to you laugh. Yeah, I think you are. You in there digging around?
I'm gonna try and do Head. I'm sure a special edition of Head. What do you think about that?
I think that's a good idea. Head was an interesting record. That's we'll have to sit and I'll give you the blow by blow of me and Jack Nicholson mixing that record.
Really? I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, sure. That's a great story. That was me and me and Jack at our craziest.
And I'd like a glass of cold gravy with a hare in it, please.
There's some nice tunes on there.
And so ends part two of my conversation with Michael Nesmith here on Monkees.com and Rhino.com. I ask you to join me for the final part three, coming up right here.